You're listening to Girls with Grafts, a burn community podcast created by Phoenix Society for Burn Survivors, a leading nonprofit dedicated to supporting the burn community. In this podcast, we'll talk with burn survivors, share resources to help with supporting and improving burn recovery, and discuss how to prevent burn injuries. Here are your hosts, burn survivors and Phoenix Society's marketing team, Amber Wilcox and Rachel Kudlak.
Hello and welcome back to Girls with Grafts. I am Rachel Kudlak. I am one of the hosts of the podcast. And today I'm joined by my lovely, lovely, lovely co-host, Amber Wilcox.
Hi again. It's so good to be back here for another episode. And I'm excited about today's guests. But before we introduce her, Rachel, let's go ahead and give a shout out to today's sponsor.
Yes. So today's podcast is powered by Solvita, who is formerly known as the Community Blood Center and Community Tissue Services. Solvita is committed to using their expertise and resources to create innovative solutions that honor our donors while improving the lives of patients around the world. So you can learn more about them at solvita.org. And without further ado, let me introduce today's guest, who is pretty well known, I think, in our burn survivor community. So today we have on Diana Tinney on the podcast. In 2010, at the age of 54, Diana was burned 94% of her body, which consisted of mostly third-degree burns. She spent over a year recovering from her injury in the hospital and then went on to have reconstructive surgeries for the next 7 years. Diana has spent most of the last 10 plus years working with other burn survivors and medical researchers. She is the past president, secretary, and treasurer of the Burn Survivors of New England. She is a co-coordinator of the knowledge translation for the Boston Harvard Burn Model Systems. She's a trained Phoenix Society peer supporter. She's a previous speaker with the American Burn Association, former wellness room leader at Phoenix World Burn Congress, and so much more. She's extremely active in burn research and advocacy, and she's also been sober for many years and is active in AA. More recently, Diana married her sweetheart, Jerry, in 2023 and has currently relocated with Jerry, her dog, Barney, and their cat, Pebbles, to Tennessee to help care for her mother. Additionally, Diana is very physically active and participates in Zumba and yoga. So thank you so much, Diana, for joining us today.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me. Oh, thank you. Yeah, we've had like a very chaotic year, but everything seems to be coming together. I have on my headphones because we have construction going on in the basement. So yeah, we're just trying to settle in here in Tennessee and of course keeping in touch and keeping active still with the New England group.
Diana, I don't know, but where did you relocate from? Were you in the Boston area?
Yes, we actually lived in New Bedford, which is about 60 miles south of Boston, and anywhere from a 2 hour to a 5 hour drive into Boston one way. So
I'm very familiar with New Bedford. I grew up right around the corner from there. So yes.
Really?
And the theater there, is it, remind me of the name, Zyterian? Is
that the Zyterian? Yeah.
My mom was in theater growing up, and my mom did many regional performances at the Zyterian Theater. So,
oh my, it's such a small world.
Small world, right? Yes.
It really is. Since we've moved here, I think we've had two waitresses and one furniture salesman that had been through the New Bedford area or been associated. Yes. So yeah.
I can't believe that my brain allowed me to remember Zyterian. So that's also like pretty impressive. It's been a very long time since I've been in that area. So
that was very good. Very
I know,
good.
I was like patting myself in the back for remembering that. But
wait, I actually have something even to make this conversation even smaller of a world. We used to stay, my family, when I was getting treated at Shriners and I would have my visits in Boston, we would drive from Pennsylvania and stay in New Bedford the night before my appointments so the drive wouldn't be as long. So, so I was like, for my mom and dad who's going to be listening to this podcast, I want to make sure they know I do remember New Bedford.
New Bedford holds a special place for everyone.
Yeah, so, I can't believe you stayed in New Bedford to drive to Boston. That was Well, and depending on the traffic, it did take me 5 hours one way to get home on one of my visits in. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know before we jump in, there's our little small world conversation to kickstart everyone. So those of you that knew New Bedford, feel free to drop a line about Diana's roots there, but so I know we have a lot to cover, but let's get started first with kind of your injury. And for those, I know we briefly know one another, but I'd love to know more about that and kind of your journey as a burn survivor, if that's okay.
Absolutely. I was injured in 2010, March the 7th. It was a beautiful spring day. 50 degrees was very warm at that time. And so I had been laid off from my job. I worked in the construction industry and that crashed. And so the company that I was working for went out of business. I was trying to go back to school to finish a degree working with the Career Development Center. And I thought that I could take a little time off from that to lay out in the sun in my backyard. And there were some tree limbs that were obstructing my sun. So I got up in the tree at the age of 54 and decided to cut some major limbs down. I had been to the tanning booth that morning. And so I had the tanning lotion on and sweatpants. And so we decided to burn the tree limbs in the chiminea, which is one of those things. And there was a grate. And we started off with lighter fluid to try and get them to burn. Ran out of lighter fluid. Next thing in the shed is gasoline. So the gasoline went on and we did not think it was lit. One more douse and the fumes combusted. I think that's what everybody gets confused about, is it's not the gasoline itself. It's not the liquid. It's the fumes that are so volatile. And so it combusted. It exploded out. Let me get my hands up here. Out the sides of the chimney and literally shot a fireball over the top of the house that my neighbor saw. I happened to be walking right by it when that explosion occurred. And again, with sweat saturated with tanning oil or tanning lotion, I immediately ignited. And we did not have the hoses out. We did not even have the outside water turned on. I knew to stop, drop, and roll. But my hair was on fire. So every time I looked down, it looked like the ground was on fire and I wasn't going to roll in fire. Jerry tried to push me down once and he ended up melting his left hand and then decided that wasn't such a good idea. My neighbor is a Jeep fanatic and he kept his hose on because he washed his Jeep every day of the year. And he finally saw the explosion, the fireball that went up, and then he saw the awnings, which were on fire. And so he got his hose over and he was putting the awnings out and I was still on fire. And so Jerry directed him, because I guess I was doing what was called burning clear, which it wasn't the yellow flames, it was clear. And of course my sweats had melted. So yeah, I sank down by the side of the house after he put me out. And for some reason I knew to tell him to hold the hose on my head. That I think brought my body temperature down probably a lot. And so I sank down by the side of the house and Jer came around. And in the meanwhile, he had been calling 911. And so I looked at him and I said, I think I'm a dead duck this time, Jer. And he said, no, he said, you have to come back to me. You're going to make it through this. So the EMTs arrived. They asked me if I could stand back up. And I said, I think I can. And I did. And then they asked me if I could put myself on the stretcher. And so I said, I think I can. And I did. And then one shot, and it was kind of like lights out, even though the respirator was funny. We were saying it's such a small world. The respiratory therapist at St. Luke's in New Bedford said that, you know, no, Diana, you were talking to me. And I thought I was just like already in this coma. But she said, you were talking to me like, I don't know. I ended up connecting with her again. I already knew her. And I ended up connecting with her again. So they med flighted me to Mass General in Boston, and they took Jerry by ambulance. It was the beginning of a very long hospital stay, a year and a month, between Mass General and Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital. And Jerry was actually in the hospital for 8 days. And he had a friend that came and picked him up. And of course, they wouldn't let him come into my room. That's all he wanted to do, was come into my room. And they would not allow that until I think the third day. The first 4 to 6 months I was in and out of comas. I had no infections for 90 days. And that was probably the other really big factor in my survival, is because they could go ahead and take me down for surgeries, I think every 1 or 2 days. Of course, I didn't have a whole lot of donor skin, so they had to grow some really quick, which was cultured cells. I'm probably about 30% cultured cells. And from there, yeah, it goes on for a year and a month, having to learn to walk again, to feed myself. The prognosis, of course, was not good in anything. They had never seen anybody my age with this big a burn. So I always called myself a guinea pig, and somebody said, that's not a really good term, Diana. Call yourself a pioneer. I'm going, okay, I'll be called a pioneer.
I love that. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing that, your journey with us. I'm always so amazed. So I was burned as a child, so I really don't remember much from my initial injury, but I'm always so amazed to hear how much survivors can remember from right when the injury happened. And especially for you, I mean, you had such a major burn injury. It's just, I guess, wild to me to think about how you were really living in that moment and going through that. Yeah.
It is amazing. It's amazing. And I think it's a blessing. It was a blessing to me, because I've spoken with so many burn survivors who do not remember anything about their trauma. And I have seen that people who do remember, I think we get through that emotional recovery stage a lot quicker, because it's something that we can deal with, rather than saying, you know, I don't really know what happened. I don't remember what happened. So I consider it a blessing that I remembered every minute, because, you know, if you look at it in the fact that once your nerves are burned, you're not really in pain. And with that many nerves burned, I don't remember any kind of initial pain. So that's a blessing too.
Yeah. It's when funny they start remember growing parts back. Of it. Yeah. And I think that was the easy part, right? Like, my hand hurt real bad because I didn't have the nerves completely burned, but I think, yeah, there's part of me that's like, yeah, I think I would have a really hard time not remembering what happened and like not knowing, because that's, we do talk to a lot of survivors that don't remember all of it. And that's really, really hard. I know there is a piece for me, like once I got to the hospital, same thing, and they give you all that medication, you start to forget. And even like the takedown where they like take off your skin and whatnot, they like drug you up a lot. And the only thing, I think I've talked about it on this podcast before, I don't remember a lot from that night. What I do remember is the chicken sandwich I ate and and it gets even weirder. I watched Grease in Spanish, and it was the only thing that I wanted to watch, I guess, on TV at that time. And I remember, like, during my thing, like, laughing at Grease in Spanish, because I didn't I grew up on the movie Grease, and I love that movie. So it didn't matter that it was in Spanish, because I still enjoyed it. But I do remember those two. So it's weird how you remember certain things about that day too.
It's weird. The other thing, I don't know if you had a chance to read the book, Rachel. I know you were going to try, but I also know you're busy. But the other thing that's really strange about the acute care phase, especially when we're delirious and hallucinating, is the half real, half fiction dreams. We told, I think, two or three in the story, in the book, but there were, like, because I wrote them down after I got home, there were like five major half reality, half fiction dreams that I had. When I talk to other burn survivors with peer support, it's amazing that if I bring up mine, they're going, oh yeah, that's it's the brain. It can be really good and it can be really bad, because if it can turn something really horrible into something that's okay, you know, that's a blessing too.
It sure is. Well, I know we have a lot to cover, but I know we do want to talk a little bit about your struggle with alcoholism and the fact that you joined AA. Do you want to, if you don't mind, share a little bit with our audience about that part of your recovery?
I do not, because my experience with alcohol recovery, I am able to help a lot of burn survivors. I think about, I'm going to guess at 50 to 60% of the people that I do peer support with have some either history of alcoholism or addiction. And it also helped me in my burn recovery. What I learned prior to my burn, because I had been in recovery for 4 years before that, what I learned with my alcohol recovery was that I could apply it to my burn, because so much of it is an emotional, spiritual issue. And that's exactly what alcoholism and drug addiction are. You know, you can kick the substance, but you still have the emotions that, you know, that you don't know how to deal with until you go through some kind of program. And there are all kinds of programs out there. Mine was the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And like I said, it's amazing the recovery curve with burns and with alcoholism addiction, and how they intertwine so very often. Because like I said, many, many of the burn survivors that I do peer support with, their burns were either caused by being intoxicated or doing drugs, and or they have a history. And then when you put the history with the burn and with all of the pain medications that we have to have, you know, you probably would not be able to survive. So it's all about being honest with your doctors, so they can adjust your medications. Shortly after my reconstructive surgeries, after discharge, I was allergic to morphine from way back, and we knew that. So they had me on methadone. And so I was going through all of these recons after discharge, and I didn't mind the staples. I didn't mind the stitches. I didn't mind that pain. But weaning off the methadone, because I did do as directed, and even sooner, I would try and get off of the pain medication that was administered after the surgery. And I looked at I saw one of my surgeons in the hall one day, and I said, I don't mind all of that other stuff, I said, but weaning off this methadone is like putting me really down. because you know, the depression comes with it, any kind of addictive medication. And she looked at me and she said, "You go right back to where you were, don't you, Diana?" And that is a term that's used with alcohol and addiction recovery. And I'm going, oh my gosh, now I'm a methadone addict. So immediately I talked with my surgeons and we did not do scripts for methadone anymore because it was affecting both my alcohol recovery and my burn recovery because I would get, you know, just that process of detoxing off of them. So yeah, so we have to be very careful. We have to be honest with our doctors, and we were from the very beginning. And I actually, in a lot of peer support visits, I will open up if I see those signs or if I hear those little cues that someone has a problem. They'll tell me a lot quicker than they will their healthcare professionals. So, you know, we can counsel all we want, just like with burn recovery, we can counsel all we want. And then it's got to be up to that individual as to whether they really want to do something about it or not.
Definitely. And I think you bring up a good point, even with anyone going through the burn recovery with medicines and pain management in general, is always be clear and kind to your professionals, your burn care teams, and have honest conversations with them and let them know how you're feeling. But that was one of our questions we wanted to ask, was how that, you know, going through the 12 steps and how that impacted or helped or maybe hurt to your burn recovery. So thanks for sharing that. I'm sure it's really nice for the burn survivors that you provide peer support to, just to hear, you know, someone who's gone through all of this and just can help show them there is light at the end of the tunnel.
That's exactly what it's all about. It's about progress, progress, not perfection. And you just take it one day at a time, just, you know, both things, the burn recovery and the alcoholism addiction recovery. It's just one day at a time. And if you have a bad day, that's okay. I always tell everybody that, okay, you know, if you wake up and you don't want to get out of bed and you're depressed or you're sad or you're tired, go ahead and take the day off. Just don't let it last for more than one day. And yeah. And in the addiction alcoholism, you can't totally take the day off and say, oh, I can drink today or use today. But yeah, it's just one day at a time. And that's so true in burn recovery. Because as you guys know, it's just a roller coaster. And that's another thing I always tell everybody, you know, enjoy the good days, because I can guarantee you all of them are not going to be good days. But just remember those good days to get through the bad ones.
Definitely. I think somebody that struggles with anxiety, I know myself, I also, like, sometimes I get, and even with my burn recovery, but this is, I apply this to like being a parent. There's so many things in life that, like, I sometimes get caught up in the snowball that is like, oh, I got to think about this and then this and then this and then this. And I know it's burn recovery is even like, okay, but maybe I'll need a surgery in 2 months or maybe I'll. And so it snowballs into this like ripple effect that ends up like really causing you to feel down and out on yourself. And so I think the one day at a time, Diana, is so important just to hit that home with everyone, because like I can focus on, and my husband's always reminding me of it, like, just focus on today, right? Like, get through today. Like, today you have to go tackle this task and you have to get through this. Once we get through that, then we can focus on, or in some times worry, right, about the future. But it can be really hard to stay like present in the moment. But I think that's a really, really important point, that like, get through the end of today. And then when you lay down at night and, you know, get ready for bed, then you can focus on, okay, like, what do I have to tackle tomorrow? But that can be a really hard thing to do.
It can be a really hard thing to do. And there's that, you know, worry promotes nothing. Worry promotes nothing but pain. Trying to get to something before you're ready to get to it does nothing but cause anxiety and worry. And so it's like, you know, don't worry about tomorrow. You have enough worries for today.
But it's a hard task to accomplish. It is a mountain, right? Like to come
absolutely,
over.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. 'Cause we can tell ourselves these things over and over again and over to actually put them into practice and action is a totally different thing.
It is a lot for me to handle. Yes.
Yeah. But at least we have that.
We know.
We know.
I think knowing is half the battle, right?
Exactly right.
Definitely. Well, Diana, I did want to ask you too a little bit about your experience being burned later in life and kind of, I mean, in general, relearning how to walk, how to eat, things like that. But what was it like just going through that journey kind of when you probably were not saying that you're on the second half of your life, but later down on the road?
That was very well put, Rachel. I guess that because I had all the life experience and because of what I have, you know, my issues all of my life, it was kind of like, all right, you know, I'm not ready to die yet. I do want to walk again. My prognosis from one doctor was that I would never walk again, that I wouldn't be able to feed myself, that I would require 24-hour-a-day care. And so my personality and my stubbornness and my, I'll show you, that actually became an asset. So it was, and here again, it was the roller coaster thing because Jerry kept on asking, when will I know she's out of the woods? And they would say when she goes to rehab. So I finally got to Spalding Rehab, and a couple of days later, he came in one day. He always knew. He monitored my medications. And he always knew when something was wrong. And so he would ask the question, does she have an infection or have you given her too much medication? And this particular day, he happened to look at my catheter bag and there was nothing in it. And I was like, really, Lulu in the head. And so he got me back over to Mass General after a little resistance. He got me over there and I had gone into complete renal failure. So I ended up having to stay at Mass General for another month. And you know how our bodies are so amazing. I was on dialysis and life support again. And all of a sudden the body said, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to try this one more time. And I came out of the renal failure totally. And off life support. The interesting thing about that was that it was my 55th birthday and my first solid food was chocolate birthday cake. So that's why, yeah, I know, pretty good.
It's I picked a good choice.
Yeah. So
yes, me.
Back to your question about what was it like in an older age? I think it was the best thing that could have happened to me because before that I had no regular physical activity. You know, I was active. I would kayak, bicycle, climb up trees to cut down limbs, things of that nature. But I really didn't have anything, you know, that was recommended for muscle tone or cardio or anything like that. So with the help of the therapist, I had lost every muscle in my body. But the way I have to look at it is that I got to form my muscles in the correct way. You know, sometimes therapists think we hate them. And I never hated any of my therapists. I loved all of them. They came to my wedding. They drove down from Boston to come to the wedding. But it's the fact that I got to do things the right way instead of Diana's way. So, you know, basically today I'm muscle and bones and that's it. I didn't have much flesh left. So I think it was a better thing, that I was older because I knew that I needed to do things properly. And mm-hmm. I was willing to learn how to do things properly, how important the core was. You know, we always tried to flatten our stomachs, right? We didn't use the word core. Your core muscles, which are the basis of every muscle in your body that you need to be using. So, yeah, I think it was nothing but a good thing. But the other thing was the facial, well, the all over scarring. I'm like 99% scars. So I wasn't trying to, you know, I had Jerry, he was unbelievably compassionate, unbelievably devoted. And so I, unlike a younger person or a child having to go through, quote, the dating years, I think that in itself was a huge obstacle that I did not have to climb. I was getting little crow's feet and, you know, so I'm justifying all this. I'm going, okay, so you know what? I got the burn facelift because the skin's so tight. I wouldn't let them do another neck release. And they wanted to, and I still have pull in my face, but I didn't want the turkey neck. So, you know, I got to make all those decisions and I'm going, okay, so I've got scars instead of wrinkles. What's the difference?
Yep.
Of course, as I age, now I have both, but I'm still okay.
I love that. It's a great outlook to have on it, though.
And I think I think that's, you know, rather than if we could get burn survivors from the get-go to focus on the positive things and reinforce those positive things and say, look, I'm still here. I could be dead and not be here, and all of my family wouldn't be around cheering me on. They'd be crying over my coffin. So I think we have to look at the gratitude and the healthcare people that I had. It didn't matter that my chances of survival, according to the way they did it then, was a negative 40. Right. You took your age and you subtracted the burn percentage. So I was at like a negative 40. But that didn't keep my doctors and my nurses from working on me just like they would anybody who had a 20% burn and trying to figure out things like, okay, where do we take donor skin from? You know, where do we get the skin? How do we get her covered? So, yeah, I think we have to look at those good things. You know, we always talk about the pain. We always talk about the itch. But a lot of times we don't focus on the great, the great journey. And the people that you meet after you're burned are just incredible. They are incredible.
And I don't think it has to be even somebody else who's been burned, right? My husband was laughing at me because I went on a business trip last week and I took an Uber about 10 minutes down the road, right? So from like the hotel I was staying at down the road. And I get in the car and just happened to be having a conversation with the person driving me, like, where are you going? You know, what are you eating? Have you eaten there before? And I happened to say, like, oh yeah, I've never eaten there, but I'm excited to, you know, try the potatoes or whatever it was. And he said, oh, you know, I can't eat a whole lot. And I was, you know, me being the one that's like very open and having conversation, just happened to say, like, yeah, you know, I'm excited. And he was like, I can't eat. And I said, so why can't you eat? And he explained that he lives without his stomach. And I said, I'm sorry. And come to find out he had cancer and he had cancer in his stomach. And so I said, I understand how trauma, but he was like so grateful. And we talked, and in that 10 minutes, my husband said, you got all that out of 10 minutes. In that 10 minutes, we talked about how it is to be grateful for things. And I happened to say, well, I have a skin graft on my leg and I had an injury and like bonding over the trauma, right? That is like things that you've been through of staying in the hospital. And he said, oh, I have a skin graft too. I guess for whatever reason, when they took out this man's stomach, he needed to have a skin graft. So we bonded over what it was like to like have to deal with skin grafts and have to deal with, and he had had chemo and he lives without a stomach now. And we went down this whole thing, but the point of the conversation at the very, you know, end last 2 minutes of the ride was like how much we were grateful for where we are now and being able to look back on that. And I thought, wow, like, it doesn't matter what trauma you've been through. It is very interesting to see, like, the gratitude that is through having a traumatic experience. And I, you know, I got out of the car, like, emotional, like, and my husband was like, this was a Lyft, like, you or an Uber, you took like 10 minutes down the road and you got that, all that. I said, guys, it was a very inspirational Lyft. And I think it's the point of, like, you are easily able to connect with someone else who has been through, it doesn't have to just be like a burn survivor, whether it's like Alcoholics Anonymous, Diana, or, another like traumatic, you know, a cancer patient in this case, you go through these experiences of like dealing with long-term healthcare, right? Of having to go through something that is difficult and painful sometimes. And so it was a very, very like grounding experience for me to just be like, yes, in that 10 minutes, I got all that out of it. And that gratitude, right? Like, we both had just such immense gratitude for life in general and being able to like not take things for granted. And I think that's super important.
That's a great story. And I go through those so often. I actually work with this little collaboration that we formed at Spalding. And it is burns, mm-hmm. spinal cord injuries, traumatic brain injuries, mm-hmm. and amputees. And it all started of me speaking with a Spalding employee in the cafeteria at Spalding, and we just happened to be in the same spot at the same time. And mm-hmm. I was there so often then that every time I would go, we would sit and talk, and we're going, we have all these things in common. Yes. Why can't, you know, there's so many voices mm-hmm. in those four categories. There's so many voices that we could mm-hmm. help if we collaborate and work together mm-hmm. on, because our issues are common.
Mm-hmm. They are in the healthcare space, I think, especially right. Like,
absolutely,
going through struggles of, I've heard you say just alone in this conversation, like having to advocate for yourself, like that can be very difficult. Whether no matter what you're in, like I've seen this across the board with family members that are in the hospital, or like you have to advocate for yourself, and unfortunately, if you don't or you don't speak up, like. Mm-hmm. That's on you kind of these days, right? Like you have to speak up. And so there's so many little things, like you said, that you can connect with someone else that's been through a similar healthcare experience because of all of those unique things that you have in common.
That's exactly right. And I'm glad you brought up the advocacy part, because that is what I spend most of my time doing for other burn mm-hmm. survivors who are not as fortunate. There again, you know, we had family members that were there advocating for us, watching, calling to the attention if there were issues, and getting in rehab and getting home health care nursing. And the more insurance steps in these days, it is really, really, you know, the period that I was in that position and needed to have home health care 5 days a week to come in and do my dressings. That's almost non-existent today. And so that's when we as advocates have to step up and scream and kick our feet for someone else that you barely know, but you know what they're going through.
Yeah.
And you know they don't have that support. So it's, I think, the advocacy part. I would like to see us do a lot more work on becoming an advocate for someone else besides your family members and your friends, because there are people, burn survivors, it's so needed for especially after discharge, and with housing,
or even with while you're in. Yeah, there's a lot they have to think about. And like you said, if you don't have that person. I have Tyler, who, my husband is often very quiet, but when it comes to, advocating for me, a different side of him comes out. And I'm sure, your now husband, Diana, Jerry, I'm sure is the same way. But I'd love it for a moment if you could talk about, I know how special my relationship with my husband was after the burn. And it was always very special, but I think there's a something unique that you go through when you've been married to someone or been with someone and have that injury experience together, right? My husband was not burned, but he went through it with me. And in your case, your husband did have, or you, Jerry, did have a burn. So can you speak a little bit about that experience and your relationship today?
Yeah, I think the relationships go through this huge transformation because it's necessary. You know, you go from being a couple, I think we had been together for 10 years when the burn happened. And we had been through, and I know Jerry doesn't mind me saying this, we had been through recovery, alcoholism recovery together. So, you know, you get to that point and I don't know, I guess life gets stale and boring and, you know, you're picking at each other and he didn't want to cut wood that he didn't want to cut tree limbs that day. He wanted to go for a walk. And, you know, so you get into that. Okay, here we go again. He wants to do one thing. I want to do the other. And then when the accident strikes, he didn't call himself a burn survivor for years. He called himself a caregiver. And so the relationship transforms into that cheerleader, caregiver, and it stays there for a long time after discharge. And then you have to really work at getting back to a couple's relationship. Because, you know, he's been doing all the advocating. I advocate for myself now, as you can well imagine. But it's like 2-3 different relationships rolled into one. And I think it's really important for couples to get back to the couple relationship rather than the survivor caregiver relationship. Mm. And so you have to go through a lot of adjustments and a lot of communication, a lot of communication, which neither one of us were very good at. I will admit it. Neither one, but you just have to work through things and say, you know, let's go on a date night. Let's do, you know, rather than you looking at my wounds and telling me if they're infected, let's go on a date night.
Right. Yeah. Or you can do that, but then make sure let's go to a date night after.
Right.
It's so funny you say this because, you know, my husband and I just had a son and we went on our first ever date night this past weekend. And whether you're going, like, anytime you're going through something, right? Like, you forget, I think you forget about, like, oh yes, in addition to this thing that we bond on, whether it's a burn injury, a child, like, we also are still married or we're still together. And we forget, like, how important it is to just, and especially with a child, but, like, in general, you're so busy talking about that thing, right? Like, okay, let's stop talking about, like, my skin grafts and you changing my skin grafts. Like, let's go sit somewhere that isn't wherever we are right now, like our house. And let's enjoy each other's company and try very hard to talk about or connect on something that isn't related to the thing at hand. Right. And it's so funny because we just went through that and I was like, we need to do this more. Like, just get out of our element and sit down and have a conversation about, and I remember the same, like, in our burn, you know, there were hours a day he would spend like changing my dressings and it was exhausting and you are tired and you don't have time to like connect and remember why you are together always, but you have, yes, you have to find that common element. And I think that's really important for you to say for those couples going through it, like step out and do something, right? Yeah.
That has nothing to do with burns or nursing or bandage changing. Whatever.
Yes.
That's interesting. We at Spalding, before they will discharge you, especially if you have a significant other, they put you in this little apartment and they tell you that you have to go out shopping, which I'll never go on Whole Foods again. Sorry, I'm probably not supposed to say that, but those people were so rude. I was barely walking and we had to go grocery shopping because we had to prepare a meal that night and then get up the next morning and you know, he had to do my bandage changes. And so we made it through through the grocery shopping, and we got home and we cooked a chicken. I think I cooked a whole chicken and some potatoes or whatever it was we bought. But the next day we were okay. He was nervous. I was nervous. The next day in the morning when he had to do my bandaging, he had been prepped, but he wasn't doing it exactly the way that the nurses did it. And we both had this total meltdown. He was crying. I was crying. At first, he was yelling. I was yelling. then it came down to he was crying. I was crying. And and we just stopped and said, okay, we got that over with. And it really ended up that his bandages lasted a lot longer than
and that's exactly, it's funny you say that because my husband and I, same thing. Like, it's very scary. My husband, and to this day, I'm like, you can't, like, you're grossed out by my husband, my son, like, spitting, right? But you, like, ripped off, like, layers of my skin, right? Like, but yes, the same thing. Like, he was very much, like, the person I preferred, right? Like, the one that, like, we had home health care that we ended up stopping because I'd be like, you're doing it wrong. Or she'd do it. And then I make my husband redo it. And I'd be like, no, I don't, I like preferred it. And even when we would go back to the hospital, I'd be like, no, he did it, because you learn, right? Like, you learn the things that make, I'm sure he did the same thing, Diana, for you. Like, he learned, okay, I don't like it wrapped this way. Can you do it the other way? So it's funny you say that, because yes, we had that same experience of like, I prefer you over anyone else. Yeah.
Well, I was blessed in that fashion too. We did our homework though, before I went home, and we found a nurse that had major burn experience, because we figured another home healthcare nurse walks in there and she's got to do total body bandages. She's going to say, see you later. And I'm not coming back. Right.
Yeah.
So my nurse and I had two, and that was over the course of all my reconstructive surgeries. They would always come back and some of the contraptions, because I don't know if, you know, if your thighs are burned, thigh bandages are impossible. I still can't do them today. Yeah, I still can't do them today.
There was no secret sauce to getting them to stay up.
There was, and my nurses found it. We made little garters. Okay. We made garters with a fishnet stuff. Yeah. Yep. But that
fishnets and yoga pants were my go-to. Yes.
But even I went over the past couple of years, I was going back to clinic for some laser on my thighs. They're my problem spot.
Spot too, Diana. Yeah, so I'll give you that.
I still have open wounds from them. And it's like, so I'm going, okay, let's do laser. I don't want to undergo anesthesia again.
No, I hate it so much.
They said, we've never done laser in clinic before. I said, well, I think it's time we tried that.
So, you're the pioneer, remember? You're not the pioneer.
That's right. I said, look at it this way. If it hurts too bad, then we'll stop. And nothing gained, nothing lost, you know. But we didn't. I went through them for 2 years. And it did improve. Did it solve? No. I've come to the conclusion that it's just one of those things that it's my normal. You deal with it. You bandage it or you don't. It's going to heal better if you do, but I don't have time. And they fall down.
I went through seven rounds of laser, and at the end of it, and it was all under anesthesia. They wouldn't do it the opposite way, Dana. And I, same thing, was like, you know what? I can live with this. It worked for the most part, but do I enjoy it? No, I'm okay.
Exactly. And I think all of us have to come to that conclusion. Yeah. When are we done? When are we okay?
When are we okay to tap out? Yeah,
to tap out. And I don't know of anybody's surgeons that I have heard that, you know, don't wholeheartedly approve of that. And after a while, at first it's your surgeon tells you what needs to be done. And then, like, after the first year, it was, I'm going, okay, we need to take care of this and we need to take care of this and we need to take care of this.
Once that's done, I'm all good. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I had decided when I reached 60 that was my cutoff for reconstructive surgeries. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing, the reconstructive surgeries that they wanted to do. It's amazing how much I gained and got there without surgery, but with massage and physical activity and yoga, yoga being first, that it was
yoga just saved my recovery. 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Well, Dinah, before we get into, I know we're getting here to the end of the podcast, but we really wanted to save time to talk about your book, God Never Moved, which you released in 2023. We don't want to give everything away. But I know Rachel put out a call out there for two different sections that you have in your note for Diana, talking a little bit about your emotional recovery, right? And you leave the treatment and surgical procedures up to the burn team, but the emotional recovery is up to you. So that was a key takeaway, I think. And then the other was about advocating for yourself, which we talked a little bit about. So we want to just give you a moment to talk a little bit about that book. I'm going to pull it up because it's available on Amazon, right? Correct?
It is.
Awesome. So there is Diana's book. But we'd love it if you just tell us, you know, what to expect in that book.
We actually had ghostwriters, and Jerry and I knew our story, and of course half the experience is not in there, and because it would have been like a 300 page book had we done that. But it is about recovery of all kinds. It's about the recovery from addiction and alcoholism. It's about the recovery from the burn. And like I said earlier in the podcast, those two emotional recoveries are so alike, and that you have to feed yourself gratitude. You have to express yourself in what is best for you, because like I just stated a few minutes ago, it's like, okay, this is what the doctor says I need done. But this is what I think I need done. This is what is going to make me feel better. And I don't really think you can do the physical recovery well unless you do the emotional recovery first. And or at least on an ongoing. And it's anything from talking to other burn survivors or other trauma survivors, like we also talked about. It's about and figuring out, just talking to people, finding out how they recovered emotionally and what they do, you know, to get up with that sense of gratitude every day. And basically that's what the book's about. I would love to have told every story, you know, we had so many, we just had so many stories and we didn't know how to make it flow. Both of us can write. Okay. But it's like, you know, it's that he said, and I told the ghostwriters the first time we met with them, because Jerry comes at it from a completely different perspective than I do. And I said, you're going to have to make it a, he said, she said book. And that's what it ended up. As you'll notice, it's Diana, Jerry.
Yeah, I loved to, that's because that's how the flow is. Yes, it's like you have a part and then Jerry's right. part and back and forth. But I loved how even in between those parts, you guys will have like little side notes from one another. Like, wait, I got to get this in there and make sure they see this, my point of view.
And that we also had some help from a very dear friend here in Tennessee. His wife was my bridesmaid, and we knew he was an author, and he's the one that gave me the ghostwriters because he knew us too well to take himself out of the story. Mm-hmm. But when the ghostwriters got through with writing it, then Paul and I were like consulting back and forth on the marketing and on Amazon and the formatting. And he's the one that came up with the asides. I think I put one in on my suggestions and he's going, no, Diana, this is what we need. This is what really brings out your guys' different personalities. So I went back through and I did the asides at his suggestion. So
Awesome.
Well, I know we're coming up on time here. So we always ask our final questions at the end of our podcast. We'll be sure to put all of the Amazon link in our show notes. We'll also, I know you are an avid volunteer as well. So we'll give opportunities for volunteering in our notes as well. But our first final question would be, what is something that you want caregivers, loved ones? We talked a lot about, right, what it's like to be the wife or the significant other of a caregiver. Do you have any advice that you'd want to share with them?
I would just say, again, it's on the day-to-day. Mm-hmm. And even I would suggest that anybody who is in the acute care phase, especially when we're so heavily medicated, that you study up on burns. And that when doctors throw all the acronyms and the medical technology at you, ask them to explain it in plain English. I've seen it so many times, and I've actually dealt with three different wives of burn survivors, very serious burns, very medically unstable. And I've been with them for 6 months at a time. And sometimes I have to encourage them to pull back from the medical side of it, because once they learn the terminology and what's being done to their loved one, then they tend to jump in and try to give the doctors the medical advice and treatments. So I have been literally asked by some nurses to see if I can rein them back. So I would say be involved in the medical aspect. And with all three of those wives also, at times I would be so uncertain there, the stability was just like their survival chances were worse than mine. Right. Mm-hmm. And I would do my weekly call with them or visit with them. And I got to a point in some cases where I didn't know what to say. Mm-hmm. And so, you know what I did? I called my members of my burn team that really, really know how important peer support is. And so the last one, I said, I don't know what to tell her. I just don't know what to tell her. I can't give her any encouragement right now because I don't want to give her false hope. I want to give her hope. But I don't want to give her false hope. And so that's also
really important.
It really is. And so this gentleman, doctor, friend, lovely, lovely person said, Diana, just tell her just to love him. And that's all she can do right now. And I did. I called back and that seemed to calm her down more than anything. Mm-hmm. That's what I would tell the caregivers at times when it all seems so bleak and there's absolutely a negative chance of survival, just to be there and to love them like you do. Yeah.
I love that. That's great advice and simple advice, you know, just love them. Is. That's what they need.
Yeah. Right.
Well, and our final question today, it's our Phoenix partner question, which today is sponsored by Solvita, whose mission is to empower people to save lives and enhance lives. So their question is, what is one thing that always brings a smile to your face, no matter how tough your day has been?
Another smile. Someone else smiling at me. And way back when I was in training and new with peer support and new with dealing with scars in public, we actually did a video out of BU, Boston University, and that's what it was called, was Just Smile. And I found that not only does it light up my life, even if I'm smiling at myself, But the people around you, when I first started going out in public, and Jerry took me to Walmart and Building 19 like every single day the first week I was home, because he knew how important it was for me to get used to being out in public with people who did not know me, who did not know what happened. And I was doing fine. And, you know, I was happy because I was happy to be out of the hospital, out in public. Nobody really stared at me much because Jerry's really big and they didn't want to mess with him. But one day we had been arguing or I was in a bad mood. And so I had a frown on my face. And, you know, I noticed that people were staring like crazy. Mm-hmm. And that's because they probably were feeling sorry for me because I looked so miserable. So I found that people treat you so much differently when you smile. And I find that when somebody is actively staring, I can turn around and smile and start a conversation. And I've had people tell me, you know, after 3 minutes of talking with you, I don't even see your scars. Mm-hmm. I had a lady in a doctor's office that told me, and I still had head bandages and everything, and no makeup. And, you know, just she looked at me, and that's, you know, those things I keep in my head because those are the tips to being happy and living good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so important. Yeah. Well, Diana, it has been a pleasure getting to have you on today's podcast. We want to thank you very much for being a part of this. And we wish you a very, very great rest of your week. And thank you for joining us.
And thank you to you guys and to the Phoenix Society for all you do.
Yes, thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Girls with Grafts. If you are enjoying this content, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.